This is the Ministry of Truth. I'm Gordon Comstock. Dear listener, dear American, if you're one of those Americans who still has faith in the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, you know the government's going to hell in a handbasket and the country's going to hell in the handbasket around you, but boy, if we could just get back to that Constitution. If you're one of those, if you're a constitutionalist, as I used to be before I educated myself, then the work of James Montgomery, the research of this man, James Montgomery, has got something for you. So just stand back, stand there, and here it comes. Like it or not. Bend Over, America, by James Montgomery. This from Mark Twain. You see, my kind of loyalty was loyalty to one's country, not to institutions or its office holders. The country's the real thing. It is the thing to watch over and care for and be loyal to. Institutions are extraneous. They are its mere clothing, and clothing can wear out and become ragged and cease to be comfortable, cease to protect the body from winter, disease, and death. To be loyal to rags, to shout for rags, to worship rags, to die for rags, that is a loyalty of unreason. It is pure animal. It belongs to monarchy. It was invented by monarchy. Well, let monarchy keep it. I was from Connecticut, whose constitution declared that all political power is inherent in the people, and all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their benefit, and that they have at all times an undeniable and indefensible right to alter their form of government in such a manner as they think expedient. Under that gospel, the citizen who thinks that the Commonwealth's political clothes are worn out and yet holds his peace and does not agitate for a new suit is disloyal. He is a traitor. That he may be the only one who thinks he sees this decay does not excuse him. It is his duty to agitate anyway, and it's the duty of others to vote him down if they do not see the matter as he does. Unquote. This from the Congressional Record, April 9, 1934, from Mark Twain. Mark Twain has stated very well what needs to be the motivation of all patriots. But any new government with leaders that do not follow God's almighty word and law, and let that reign supreme, will return to the ashes in which their endeavor was begun. It's not an easy thing having to tell someone that they've been conned into believing they are free. For some, to accept this is comparable to denying God Almighty. You have to be made to understand that the United States is a corporation, which is a continuation of the corporate charters created by the King of England, and that the states, upon ratifying their individual state constitutions, became sub-corporations under and subordinate to the corporation of the United States. The counties and municipalities became sub-corporations under the state charters. It is my duty to report further evidence concerning the claims I made in the United States is still a British colony. I have always used a copy of the North Carolina Constitution provided by the state. I should have known better to take this as the final authority. To my knowledge, the following quote has not been in the Constitution that the state hands out or those in use in the schools. The 1776 North Carolina Constitution created a new corporate charter and declared our individual freedoms. However, the same corporate charter reserved the king's title to the land, which restored and did not diminish his grants that were made in his early charters. If you remember, I made the claim that legally we are still subject to the king. In In the below quote, you will see that the king declares that our taxation will be forever, and that a fourth of all gold and silver will be returned to him. This is from the Carolina Charter from 1663. Quote, yielding and paying yearly to us our heirs and successors, that means all the kings and queens to come, for the same, the yearly rent of 20 marks of lawful money of England, at the Feast of All Saints, yearly, forever, the first payment thereof to begin and be made on the Feast of All Saints, which shall be in the year of our Lord 1665, and also the fourth part of all gold and silver ore, which, with the limits aforesaid, shall from time to time happen to be found, unquote. Side note, boy, does that ever wonderfully dovetail with what David Astell wrote about in The Babylonian Woe, where the front men for the bankers, the kings, queens, tyrants, dictators, whoever, presidents, they will always make sure that the gold and silver gets to the bankers. They will always make sure the bankers, their bosses, get paid in ore, in gold and silver ore. And thus we find it here. From the King of England in 1663. Back to Bend Over, America, by James Montgomery. I know patriots will have a hard time with this because, as I said earlier, they would have to deny what they have been taught from an early age. You have to continue to go back in historical documents and see if what you have been taught is correct. The following quote is from Section 25 of the 1776 North Carolina Constitution Declaration of Rights. Quote, and provided further that nothing herein contained shall affect the titles or possessions of individuals holding or claiming under the laws heretofore in force or grants heretofore made by the late King George II or his predecessors or the late Lord's proprietors or any of them, unquote. The Declaration of Rights, 1776, from North Carolina's Constitution. Can it be any plainer? Nobody reads. They take what is told to them by their schools and government as gospel and never look any further. They are quick to attack anyone that does look further because it threatens their way of life. It rocks the boat, in other words. Read the following quote from a court case. Quote, definition given by Blackstone, Volume 2, page 244. I shall therefore only cite that respectable authority in his own words. Quote, escheat, we may remember, was one of the fruits and consequences of feudal tenure. The word itself is originally French or Norman, in which language it signifies chance or accident, and with us denotes an obstruction of the course of descent and a consequent determination of the tenure by some unforeseen contingency, in which case the estate naturally results back by a kind of reversion to the original grantor or lords of the fee, unquote. Every person knows in what manner the citizens acquired the property of the soil within the limits of this state. Being dissatisfied with the measures of the British government, they revolted from it, assumed the government into their own hands, seized and took possession of all the estates of the King of Great Britain and his subjects, appropriated them to their own use, and defended their possessions against the claims of Great Britain during a long and bloody war, and finally obtained a relinquishment of those claims by the Treaty of Paris. But this state had no title to the territory prior to the title of the King of Great Britain and his subjects, nor did it ever claim as Lord paramount to them. This state was not the original grantor to them, nor did they ever hold any kind of tenure under the state, or owe it any allegiance or other duties to which an escheat is annexed. How then can it be said that the lands in this case naturally result back by a kind of reversion to this state, to a source from whence it never issued, and from tenants who never held under it? Might it not be stated with equal propriety that this country escheated to the King of Great Britain from the Aborigines when he drove them off and took and maintained possession of their country? At the time of the Revolution and before the Declaration of Independence, the collective body of the people had neither right to nor possession of the territory of this state. It is true some individuals had a right to and were in possession of certain portions of it, which they held under grants from the King of Great Britain, but they did not hold, nor did any of his subjects hold, under the collective body of the people, who had no power to grant any part of it. After the Declaration of Independence and the establishment of the Constitution, the people may be said first to have taken possession of this country, at least so much of it as was not previously appropriated to individuals. Then their sovereignty commenced, and with it a right to all the property not previously vested in individual citizens, with all the other rights of sovereignty, and among those the right of escheats. This sovereignty did not accrue to them by escheat, but by conquest from the King of Great Britain and his subjects. But they had acquired nothing by that means from the citizens of the state. Each individual had, under this view of the case, a right to retain his private property, independent of the reservation in the Declaration of Rights. But if there could be any doubt on that head, it is clearly explained and obviated by the proviso in that instrument. Therefore, whether the state took by right of conquest or escheat, all the interest which the UK had previous to the Declaration of Independence still remained with them, on every principle of law and equity, because they are purchasers for a valuable consideration, and being in possession as sestui quae trust under the statute for transferring uses into possession. And citizens of this state, at the time of the Declaration of Independence, and at the time of making the Declaration of Rights, their interest is secured to them beyond the reach of any act of assembly, neither can it be affected by any principle arising from the doctrine of escheats, supposing what I do not admit, that the state took by escheat. Unquote. That from 1801, the court case Marshall versus Lovelace. There was no way we could have had a perfected title to this land. Once we had won the Revolutionary War, we would have had to have had an unconditional surrender by the king, and this did not take place. Not what took place at Yorktown, when we let the king off the hook. Barring this, the king would have to have sold us this land for us to have a perfected title, just as the Indians sold their land to the king, or the 8 Carolina proprietors sold Carolina back to the king. The Treaty of 1783 did not remove the king's claim and original title because he kept the minerals. This was no different than when King Charles II gave Carolina by charter to the lords that helped put him back in power. Compare them, and you will see the end result is the same. The charter to the Lords is footnote 6, where 8 proprietors were given title to the land, but the king retained the money and sovereignty for his heirs. The king could not just give up America to the colonialist, nor would he. He would violate his own law of mortmain to put these lands in dead hands, no longer to be able to be used by himself or his heirs and successors. He would also be guilty of harming his heirs and successors by giving away that which he declared in the following quotes, and there are similar quotes in the other charters. Quote, saving always the faith, allegiance, and sovereign dominion due to us, our heirs and successors for the same, and saving also the right title and interest of all, and every our subjects of the English nation, which are now planted within the limits bounds aforesaid, if any be. Unquote from the Carolina Charter, 1663, footnote number 5. Quote, know ye that we, of our further grace, certain knowledge and mere motion, have thought fit to erect the same tract of ground, country, and island into a province, and out of the fullness of our royal power and prerogative, we do, for us, our heirs and successors, erect, incorporate, and ordain the same into a province, and do call it the province of Carolina, and so from henceforth will have it called. Unquote. The Carolina Charter, 1663, footnote number 5 again. The U.S. Constitution is a treaty between the states creating a corporation for the king. In the below quote, pay attention to the large S state and the small S state. The large S state is referring to the corporate state, capital S, and its sovereignty over the small S state. Because of the treaty, read the following quote. Quote, headnote 5. Besides, the Treaty of 1783 was declared by an act of assembly of this state, capital S, passed in 1787, to be law in this state, capital S, and this state, capital S, by adopting the Constitution of the United States in 1789, declared the treaty to be the supreme law of the land. The treaty now under consideration was made on the part of the United States, capital S, by a Congress composed of deputies from each state, lowercase s, to whom were delegated by the Articles of Confederation expressly the sole and exclusive right and power of entering into treaties and alliances. And being ratified and made by them, it became a complete national act, and the act and law of every state, lowercase s. If, however, a subsequent sanction of this state, capital S, was at all necessary to make the treaty law here, it has been had and repeated. By a statute passed in 1787, the treaty was declared to be law in this state, capital S, and the courts of law and equity were enjoined to govern their decisions accordingly. And in 1789 was adopted here the present Constitution of the United States, capital S, which declared that all treaties made, or which should be made under the authority of the United States, capital S, should be the supreme law of the land, and that the judges in every state, lowercase s, should be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state, lowercase s, to the contrary notwithstanding. There it is, folks, there it is. Surely then, the treaty is now law in this state, capital S, and the Confiscation Act, so far as the treaty interferes with it, is annulled, unquote. There you have it, folks. The state, the corporate entity known as the state, with a capital S, reigns supreme over the geographic region state, lowercase s. We've been sold out. We've been sold a bill of goods. By who? By lawyers, still subject to the king with their title of nobility called Esquire. And what did Jesus Christ say about lawyers? He wished woe upon them and the money changers who rule over the king and the lawyers. What did these... I mean, think about this. When we're children, okay, you play these little petty games when you're children, like, not it, and you touch them, not it, not it, and little word games, like, remember that stupid Pee Wee Herman movie? I know you are, but what am I? I know you are, but what am I? And I double dog dare you. I triple dog dare you. All of these stupid little word games. Childish little word games. Tag, you're it. That's what children do, right? That's what lawyers do. And that's how they rule surreptitiously over you, fools. They've got you. They had to resort to childish little word games, little capitalization games, but they did. And that's how they've got you as their slave. Look at your driver's license. Your name is all in caps. Because that's the fiction you, the straw man you, if you will. Although some people have abused that and claim that they get to have all this free money now. Forget that. But that your name in all caps, that's the fiction you, and that's how they enslave you. And here, the capital S state, that's the corporation. The lowercase s state, that's the geographic state you live in and in which you were enslaved in. To the corporate capitalist state. Congratulations, you just got it. Finally. Now you know why James Montgomery entitled this chapter, Bend Over, America. Quote, by an act of the legislature of North Carolina passed in April 1777, it was, among other things, enacted that all persons being subjects of this state, capital S, and now living therein, or who shall hereafter come to live therein, who have traded immediately to Great Britain or Ireland within 10 years last past, in their own right, or acted as factors, storekeepers, or agents here, or in any of the United States of America, all caps, for merchants residing in Great Britain or Ireland, shall take an oath of abjuration and allegiance, or depart out of the state, capital S. That from Treaties Are the Law of the Land, the court case Hamilton versus Eaton from 1796. Your presence in the state, capital S, makes you subject to its laws. Read the following quote. The states are to be considered with respect to each other as independent sovereignties, possessing powers completely adequate to their own government, in the exercise of which they are limited only by the nature and objects of government, by their respective constitutions, and by that of the United States, capital U, capital S. The corporation, in other words. Crimes and misdemeanors committed within the limits of each are punishable only by the jurisdiction of that state where they arise. For the right of punishing, being founded upon the consent of the citizens, express or implied, cannot be directed against those who never were citizens, and who likewise committed the offense beyond the territorial limits of the state claiming jurisdiction. And the lowercase state. Our legislature may define and punish crimes committed within the state, uppercase S there, the corporate state, whether by citizen or strangers, because the former are supposed to have consented to all laws made by the legislature, and the latter, whether their residence be temporary or permanent, do impliedly agree to yield obedience to all such laws as long as they remain in the state, capital S, the corporate state there. Unquote. That was from the court case State versus Knight from 1799. Do you understand now the treaty, the corporate charter, the North Carolina Constitution, in this case, by proxy of the electorates, created residence in the large S state, the corporate state, not by some further acumen. So how can expatriation from the United States, capital U, capital S, remove your residence in the state, capital S, which was created by treaty, ratified by our, quote-unquote, forefathers? As soon as the corporate charter or treaty was ratified, we returned to subjection to the King of England through the legal residence created by the treaty. Remember in the quote I gave earlier, by treaty we recanted our declared freedom and returned to the king his sovereignty and title. In the following quote, you will see that the state Supreme Court, capital S state, sits by being placed by the General Assembly. This is the North Carolina Supreme Court history, Supreme Court of North Carolina, a brief history. Quote, the legal and historical origins of the Supreme Court of North Carolina lie in the state, capital S, Constitution of 1776, which empowered the General Assembly to appoint judges of the Supreme Courts of Law and Equity and judges of Admiralty. The first meeting of the court took place on January 1, 1819. The court began holding two sittings, or terms, a year. The first beginning on the second Monday in June, and the second on the last Monday in December. This schedule endured until the Constitution of 1868 prescribed the first Mondays in January and July for the sittings. Vacancies on the court were filled temporarily by the governor with the assistance and advice of the Council of State, capital S, until the end of the next session of the State, lowercase s, General Assembly. Unquote. From the internet, address can be made available. Council of State, capital S. What is the Council of State, and where did it originate? 3. Quote, the one of which councils to be called the Council of State, lowercase s, and whose office shall chiefly be assisting with their care, advice, and circumspection to the said governor, shall be chosen, nominated, and placed and displaced from time to time by us, the said treasurer, council, and company, and our successors, which council of state, lowercase s, shall consist, for the present, only of these persons as are here inserted. 4. The other council, more generally to be called by the governor, once yearly, and no oftener, but for very extraordinary and important occasions, shall consist, for the present, of the said Council of State, lowercase s, and of two burgesses out of every town, hundred, or other particular plantation, to be respectively chosen by the inhabitants, which council shall be called the General Assembly, wherein all matters shall be decided, determined, and ordered by the greater part of the voices then present, as also in the said Council of State, lowercase s, reserving to the governor always a negative voice, And this General Assembly shall have free power to treat, consult, and conclude as well of all emergent occasions concerning the public weal of the said colony and every part thereof, as also to make, ordain, and enact such general laws and orders for the behoof of the said colony and the good government thereof, as shall from time to time appear necessary or requisite, unquote, that from an ordinance and constitution of the Virginia Company in England, see footnote 4. The job of the First Council of State, capital S, was to make sure the governor followed the king's wishes. The second was the General Assembly. The laws they passed had to conform to the king's law. Read the following quote. Also see footnote 4. 5. Quote, whereas in all other things we require the said General Assembly, as also the said Council of State, lowercase s, to imitate and follow the policy of the form of government, laws, customs, and manner of trial, and other administration of justice used in the realm of England, as near as may be even as ourselves, by His Majesty's letters patent are required. 6. Provided that no law or ordinance made in the said General Assembly shall be or continue in force or validity, unless the same shall be solemnly ratified and confirmed in a general quarter of the said company here in England, and so ratified, be returned to them under our seal, it being our intent to afford the like measure also unto the said colony, that after the government of the said colony shall once have been well framed and settled accordingly, which is to be done by us, as by authority derived from His Majesty, and the same shall have been so declared by us, no orders of court afterwards shall bind the said colony unless they be ratified in like manner in the General Assemblies, in witness whereof we have hereunto set our common seal, the 24th of July, 1621, unquote, an ordinance and constitution of the Virginia Company in England. And that, again, is footnote 4 on here, which we won't read, but now we get back to James Montgomery's writing. It's interspersed with these quotes here. Montgomery writes, "The Council of State still exists today, although it has been modified several times. The first major change came in 1776. North Carolina Constitution, read the below quotes. 16, quote, that the Senate and House of Commons jointly, at their first meeting, after each annual election, shall, by ballot, elect 7 persons to be a Council of State, lowercase s, for 1 year, who shall advise the governor in the execution of his office, and that 4 members shall be a quorum. Their advice and proceedings shall be entered in a journal, to be kept for that purpose only, and signed by the members present, to any part of which any member present may enter his dissent, and such journal shall be laid before the General Assembly when called for by them," unquote. See footnote number 9. 19, quote, "The governor, for the time being, shall have power to draw for and apply such sums of money as shall be voted by the General Assembly for the contingencies of government, and be accountable to them for the same. He also may, by and with the advice of the Council of State, lowercase s, lay embargoes, or prohibit the exportation of any commodity for any term not exceeding 30 days, at any one time in the recess of the General Assembly, and shall have the power of granting pardons and reprieves, except where the prosecution shall be carried on by the General Assembly, or the law shall otherwise direct, in which case he may, in the recess, grant a reprieve until the next sitting of the General Assembly, and he may exercise all the other executive powers of government, limited and restrained, as by this Constitution is mentioned, and according to the laws of the state, capital S, and on his death, inability, or absence from the state, capital S, the Speaker of the Senate for the time being, and in case of his death, inability, or absence from the state, capital S, the Speaker of the House of Commons shall exercise the powers of government after such death, or during such absence or inability of the Governor, or Speaker of the Senate, or until a new nomination is made by the General Assembly, unquote, footnote 9. Don't you just love this legalese, this Byzantine, bizarro world legalese language that is designed to make it really impossible for the average man to read it? This is a priesthood, these dastardly lawyers. An arcane priesthood. This is their mystery religion. This is how they reign supreme over you. Language obfuscation. Getting back, 20, quote, that in every case where any officer, the right of whose appointment is, by this Constitution, vested in the General Assembly, shall, during their recess, die, or his office by other means become vacant, the Governor shall have power, with the advice of the Council of State, capital S, to fill up such vacancy by granting a temporary commission, which shall expire at the end of the next session of the General Assembly, unquote. See footnote 9. Also, take notice, who was not allowed to serve as Council of State, capital S, 26, quote, that no treasurer shall have a seat, either in the Senate, House of Commons, or Council of State, during his continuance in that office, or before he shall have finally settled his accounts with the public, for all the monies which may be in his hands at the expiration of his office, belonging to the state, capital S, and hath paid the same into the hands of the succeeding treasurer, unquote. 27, quote, that no officer in the regular army or navy in the service and pay of the United States, capital U, capital S, of this state, capital S, or any other state, capital S, nor any contractor or agent for supplying such army or navy with clothing or provisions, shall have a seat either in the Senate, House of Commons, or Council of State, lowercase s, or be eligible thereto. And any member of the Senate, House of Commons, or Council of State, lowercase s, being appointed to and accepting of such office, shall thereby vacate his seat, unquote. 28, quote, that no member of the Council of State, lowercase s, shall have a seat either in the Senate or House of Commons, unquote. 30, quote, that no secretary of this state, capital S, Attorney General or clerk of any court of record shall have a seat in the Senate, House of Commons, or Council of State, lowercase s, unquote, see footnote 9. The King continued to rule through the Council of State, capital S, until several things were in place, namely his bank, his laws, his tradition. The King succeeded by the acceptance of the American people that they were free, along with the whole of our history not being taught in our schools. The next change to the Council of State, capital S, came at the conquest of this country. I refer to this in part one and in A Country Defeated in Victory. Read this quote from the 1868 North Carolina Constitution. All right, so this is post-Civil War now. Article 3, Section 14, quote, the Secretary of State, capital S, Auditor, Treasurer, Superintendent of Public Works, and Superintendent of Public Instruction shall constitute ex officio the Council of State, capital S, who shall advise the governor in the execution of his office, and three of whom shall constitute a quorum. Their advice and proceedings in this capacity shall be entered in a journal, to be kept for this purpose exclusively, and signed by the members present, from any part of which any member may enter his dissent. And such journal shall be placed before the General Assembly when called for by either House. The Attorney General shall be, ex officio, the legal adviser of the Executive Department, unquote, see footnote 10. All right, last paragraph for this installment of Bend Over America by James Montgomery. After the Civil War, the conquest of America, you see, those that were allowed to be Council of State, capital S, were elected officials. Under the 1776 North Carolina Constitution, it was unlawful for these elected officials to be Council of State, capital S. Why? Because the king could not trust the common man to obey him, now that they thought they were free. After the Civil War, the Council of State, capital S, was no longer needed to fulfill the public policy of the king. The Council of State, capital S, still exists today, but in a reduced capacity as far as the king goes. Now, he had the 14th Amendment, his lawyers in the government, his bankers in control of the government's money, and above all, greed that causes most in office to continue the status quo. All right, this was part one of Bend Over America. I love saying that. By James Montgomery. I love saying it because there are so many people who, even if they get most of it, they get the NWO part of it, but they won't go there. They won't, even when it's staring them in the face, they won't accept certain things because they have been taught certain things that have become part of their faith, really, part of their religion. They have a faith in the founding fathers, even though the Bible says don't call people fathers. Call no one father. They have a faith in the Constitution. They don't want to step outside of that religion, which they have somehow idiotically combined with their true religion of Jesus Christ and His Word in the King James and Geneva Bibles. All right. That was Bend Over America, you constitutionalists. Take it. Whether you like it or not, that's the way it is. You're enslaved, you always were enslaved. It's not that the government is operating outside of the law. The Constitution was a fraud. Things have only degraded since that fraud. You're right about that. You're right, we've lost our privileges that the Constitution gave us. That's where we're at now. All right, so anyway, I'm Gordon Comstock. This has been the Ministry of Truth. Over and out.